Hello, so glad to be back with a daily paper recording from Decatur, starting with the Herald and Review on this Wednesday, January 27th, 2016. Variety of things here on the first page. Let's start out with budget action urged. Springfield social service agencies, union members, college students, and others came to the capital city Tuesday, a day before Governor Bruce Rauner is set to deliver his second State of the State address to sound the alarm that Illinois is in a state of crisis. The cause of that crisis, they say, is the first-term Republicans' ongoing budget standoff with the Democratic-controlled General Assembly. Rauner has said he's open to discussing tax increases, but only after the legislators adopt parts of his turnaround agenda, which includes changes to the way legislative districts are drawn, term limits for lawmakers, and a property tax freeze paired with new limits on collective bargaining for local government workers. Continuing on here, the Responsible Budget Coalition, made up of more than 200 organizations from across the state, held a news conference at the Capitol to highlight some of the effects of the budget impasse. Those include the loss of support services for homeless veterans in Decatur, a 25% reduction in hours for all staff at a Charleston Rape Crisis Center, and cuts to staff hours or programs at 75% of county health departments south of Interstate 70, according to the group. It's wrong to put other issues, other agenda items, other personal agenda items in front of coming up with a state budget, said Dan Lesser, director of the Economic Justice at the Sargent Shriver National Center on Poverty Law in Chicago. You can see the pain that's being caused by this insistence on preconditions to actually negotiating and enacting a state budget. Julie Mavec runs Lutheran Child and Family Services Veterans Assistance Programs in Decatur. She said her program hasn't been able to provide services such as transportation to homeless veterans since the state's fiscal year began July 1st. I can't stress enough how important this funding is to all the veterans in my program, Mavec said. The coalition wants the governor and lawmakers to choose revenue to resolve the deadlock, beginning with returning individual and corporate tax rates to 5 and 7% respectively, that dropped to 3.75 and 5.25% last year under the partial rollback of a 2011 increase. The Responsible Budget Coalition should know the first step in having a responsible budget is having a truly balanced budget, Rauner spokesman Catherine Kelly wrote in an emailed response to a request for comment. Governor Rauner stands ready to pass structural reforms and a balanced budget that will help fund social service programs and jumpstart our economy. In his speech today, Rauner is expected to continue his push for redistricting reform, term limits, property tax relief, and other portions of his agenda, according to excerpts of his prepared remarks. He's also expected to highlight education reforms that will focus on eliminating wasteful bureaucracy, putting more money into our classrooms and holding our schools truly accountable for results, and changes to health and human services that he believes will repair a broken patchwork of reactive, expensive, and ineffective interventions. A group of union members gathered earlier Tuesday at the Illinois AFL-CIO headquarters in Springfield to urge the governor to end the standoff and work with legislators to pass a budget. Many of Rauner's policy priorities would weaken the power of labor unions. The governor's, quote, radical demands are holding up the budget, unquote, said Michael Kerrigan of Decatur, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Boris Rosas and Mary Diener of Decatur, members of the Labor Union 159, are engaged to be married in October. They said their union jobs have helped them stay in the middle class and provide for their daughters, age 11 and 13. They said they wish Rauner understood the importance of their union and the impact of the lack of a budget has on people's lives. I just want him to really focus on trying to relate to people who are making $25,000 a year, Rosas said. Kim Clark Mace, state director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, said it's unfair to lay all the blame at the impasse at Rauner's feet. Organized labor represents a very small percentage of the working people in Illinois, but they have done very well under the status quo, Mace said, and so it's no surprise that Governor Rauner, who's obviously shaking things up in Springfield, is causing them a lot of heartache. Despite Rauner's signals that he's open to tax increase, Democrats have refused to truly negotiate, she said. back to page one. A more upbeat type article. There's a picture here of a gal leading a more experienced skaters through a drill near the end of practice. The Prairie Land Punishers were holding a boot camp for skaters interested in trying out for the roller derby team. The headline says, "They bring pain." Prairie Land Punishers, roller derby opens latest boot camp. Waiting for it to reveal itself here. Decatur. Prairie Land Punishers, roller derby team members learn to take it on the chin, or the body, or the legs, arms and various other extremities subject to being bashed, battered, and bruised. Players on the team that competes in the Women's Flat Track Roller Derby Association are no shrinking violets. "I wasn't totally ready for the amount of physical contact," said Punisher Kate Stankovic, 34, who went through recruitment sessions in 2015 before making the grade. "But then I thought, hey, this is great. That's the kind of girl the Punishers are looking for." One of their semi-annual recruitment and training sessions, called the Punisher Fresh Meat Boot Camp, lasts for 10 hours and is split into four sessions over 2 weeks. Week one was last week, and it continued this week at George's Skate Center in Decatur. A total of 11 recruits showed up, and that pleased the Punisher High Command, even though statistically they know most of them probably won't end up on the team. A previous recruiting drive pulled in 15 potential players, of which only 5 survived to achieve team status. The rest either didn't have what it takes or decided a mixed martial arts cage match might be more restful. The Fresh Meat Boot Camp isn't out to hurt anyone, however. Raw recruits, many far from accomplished skaters, are shown how to put on protective padding and taught the rudiments of good skating. It's a slow ramp-up designed to assess skill levels and teach from there. Those who make it will need a lot more training and practice before they have the strength, skills, and stamina to survive the high-speed, hard-knocks world of women's roller derby. Without getting too far into the technical weeds, it's a kinetic game in which 2 teams of 5 players, from a bench of 14, fly around an oval track, trying to block each other so one designated player, called a jammer, can make it past the melee, which is how they score. Players say you are in a mixture of offense and defense all the time, and everything goes right or wrong very quickly. Why does anyone do it? "It's probably the adrenaline, I guess," said Stankovic, a.k.a. Wildcat. All spelled with a K, Wildcat. All skaters have team names that usually hint at aggression. And it's just fun because you have a lot of camaraderie with a great group of women, so it's really self-esteem building. And anything on wheels, I think, is fun. Stankovic is senior living sales director at Primrose Retirement Community in Decatur, and she says residents love to come watch her in action. "Now when I walk down the halls at work, some of them will give me a little shoulder check and stuff, and we joke back and forth," she said. "They're as excited about the sport as I am." Continued on page 2. Her role at the boot camp is to help train and bring on specimens of fresh meat, like registered nurse Giovanna Johnson, who made the trek all the way from her home in Springfield to try out for the team. The thought of being a Punisher someday elevates her pulse, and she's anxious to belong. "I know this sounds cheesy, but it really is like family here," said the 32-year-old who's been following the team and its exploits for some 18 months now. "I just saw these girls and thought, oh my goodness, I like that. The physical side doesn't worry me. I think it'll push me because I know I have to train harder and will have to get more in shape, but I want that." The Punishers, established in 2011, will play 9 games, including a 2-day tournament this year in a season that begins with team practice in February. Travel times can be up to 6 hours, and with a hectic twice-a-week practice schedule, getting on the team and staying on it is a big commitment. Jessie Johnson, a 6-year veteran who powerlifts, among other sports, to improve her strength, said it is a labor of love for many women. "I think we all learn to love it," added Johnson, 30, "or else we wouldn't come back." Perhaps surprisingly, the all-female Punishers have entrusted their coaching to a man, 29-year-old Brian Cassidy, a.k.a. Impale Ale. Impale Ale. Brian Cassidy, an experienced hockey player, he became smitten with roller derby and captains a male team in Springfield, but said the men's game is nowhere as big as the women's version. There's almost like 500 teams in the WFTDA, the governing body of the women's roller derby, he said, and on the other side, there's something like 40 or 50 men's teams. He said the Punishers are ranked about 119th out of some 350 ranked teams and described their skills and abilities as improving in leaps and bounds. He said the flat track version of the sport got rolling seriously in 2001 and women all over the world have embraced it like a long lost friend. It's become an outlet people could look to, he said. Roller derby came along and filled a need. To find out more about the Prairieland Punishers, visit them at www.punishersderby.com. Home games are played at the Decatur Civic Center, and the first one is coming up March 16th. Going back to the first page. Now we're into crime. Kendricks is found guilty of murder by Huey Freeman, the H&R staff writer. Decatur. After deliberating for 2 hours, a jury of seven women and five men returned verdicts of guilty on all three counts of murder, of first-degree murder for Ricky Kendricks, with enhancements for using a firearm and killing a witness in a criminal case. Kendricks, 28, showed no emotion as Associate Macon Judge Thomas E. Little read aloud the verdicts at 5:10 p.m. Kendricks leaned forward on his arms on the defense table, flanked by his two attorneys. The gallery with four Kendricks supporters on one side and six members of the Macon County State's Attorney Office on the other side was silent as the judge read from the nine verdict sheets. He will be sentenced to 45 years in life in prison at a hearing. The date of that hearing will be determined at a status hearing on March 4th. Kendricks shot to death 21-year-old Isaiah Wiley, a key witness against Kendricks' associate DeMarta Cunningham the afternoon. Okay, let's start that sentence again. I'm sorry. Kendricks shot to death 21-year-old Isaiah Wiley, a key witness against Kendricks' associate DeMarta Cunningham the afternoon of December 9th, 2012, in a hail of 13 bullets from a .40-caliber semi-automatic pistol. Cunningham shot to death two people in Simmer style 8 months earlier and was awaiting trial when Wiley was killed. He was convicted by a jury for killing his cousin Freedom Cunningham over a drug debt and his cousin's wife, Central Cunningham, because she was a witness at the scene. DeMarta Cunningham, 31, who grew up with Kendricks, is serving a life sentence in the Illinois Department of Corrections. Jail audio tapes between DeMarta Cunningham and Kendricks, in which they use code to discuss Wiley's murder, were key elements in the trials of both defendants. The key witness in the Kendricks case was a woman who was sitting on the porch of an abandoned house at 416 East Wagoner Street while Wiley, her boyfriend, stood a few feet away. During his closing argument, lead defense attorney Travis Strobach contended that this woman's testimony should not be believed because she initially identified another specific individual as a shooter and later said she was certain it was a different man, also not Kendricks. Strobach told the jurors that she was the only one who placed Kendricks at the crime scene and the only one who placed a gun in his hand. She reminded jurors that the woman testified that after shooting incident, she smoked marijuana regularly and experienced hallucinations. After much testimony during the six-day trial showed that John Gotti Whittle, a heroin dealer associated with DeMarta Cunningham, was with Kendricks the day of the Wiley murder, Strobach used his closing to advance the theory that Whittle was the shooter. Whittle, who is serving a 24-year prison sentence for being an armed habitual criminal, was arrested with the murder weapon in April 2013. Whittle was not mentioned by the eyewitness as a possible suspect. During her closing argument, Assistant State Attorney Kate Kurtz said there was plenty of evidence that placed Kendricks at the crime scene, which exactly fits the testimony of Wiley's girlfriend. Kurtz said that Strobach's idea that Whittle did it is not that different from the state's theory. She said they both were talking on the phone to DeMarta Cunningham that day and were both at the scene. But it was Kendricks who told DeMarta Cunningham in a taped jail cell, "It's all black," shortly after Wiley was killed. It's this dependent that's elated and proud and bragging about what he's done to Isaiah Wiley, Kurtz said. She replayed audio tapes of the calls in which Kendricks, talking in a code that speaks of building a house instead of killing the witness, said, "I got a visual on that house yesterday. DeMarta Cunningham told him you can build a house by yourself." Kurtz said people don't build houses by themselves, and there was no evidence Kendricks did any construction work during that time. "This house," expletive, "is the most important," expletive, Cunningham said. "It's the only thing I think about is you in this crib," Kendricks told him, referring to the jail. Kurtz said that before the murder occurred, he got his eye focused on one thing and one thing only. During the closing, Kurtz replayed the surveillance video from a nearby high-rise building, which shows a white car believed to be the one Kendricks was riding in front of the crime scene at the time of the shooting. Kurtz reminded the jurors that after Kendricks was engaged in numerous jail cells, Kurtz reminded the jurors that after Kendricks was engaged in numerous jail calls in which he offered to help out DeMarta Cunningham in many ways, including bringing him phone cards, he told a different story to a detective the day of his arrest. Kurtz played the videotape of the interview, which took place the day of Kendricks' arrest, July 29, 2013. After telling Detective Barry Hitchens that he only talked to DeMarta Cunningham a few times on the phone, Hitchens asked him if he was doing anything for him while he was in the jail. Kendrick replied, "I couldn't do nothing," added that he couldn't even feed himself. "How could I do something for him?" Kendricks, who had been held in jail without bond since his arrest July 29, 2013, will continue to be held without bond pending transfer to the Illinois Department of Corrections. End of that article. The last article on page one of the Herald and Review for the Decatur on this Wednesday the 27th is "School Board Shuts Down Adult Education. Members' Concerns Expressed Regarding State Budget Woes." This is by Valerie Wells of the H&R staff. Decatur. Decatur school board members expressed out loud their reluctance to approve the suspension of adult education classes until funding is restored by the state, but did not approve the decision at the Tuesday meeting. "We never talk about adult education, probably because it runs so well," board member Fred Spanis said. "They serve a population that might not get into the workforce without their help. The money's there, but it's caught up in this incredibly stupid political dispute. Adult education, with the exception of the current certified nurse assistant class that will end March 2nd, will be discontinued indefinitely." Board member Alita Graham encouraged board members to call and write to legislators and the governor and hound them to correct the budget situation without delay. In other business, the board approved the district calendar for 2016-17 school year and accepted Robertson Charter School draft for its contract renewal. During the board discussion time, Sam Johnson, a BLDD architect, led a brainstorming session on district building usage, which has been the subject of two community meetings with a third scheduled for March. Johnson said he wanted the input from the board to create talking points for the March meeting and to have information on cost and implementation ideas that have already been suggested or might be suggested. One of those is to have more K through 8 buildings and possibly do away with the middle school format or expand it to 6th, 7th, 8th, so students wouldn't have such a short time in middle school. On to the rest of the article on page 2. Graham suggested consideration of buildings serving grades 7 to 12 as one solution. Board member Dan Oakes asked for a study of which district buildings are nearing the end of their useful life and whether continued use and maintenance were financially feasible. Some buildings could be repurposed and used for different grade levels or programs than they currently house. One idea that several board members agreed with, suggested by board member B.A. Butts, was exploring the possibility of community Partnerships with organizations or businesses whose interest is improving the community could extend to shared facilities or shared expense of upgrades and changes. End of that article. On to local. Richland Near's business goal. Funds to construct its newest building allow for design phase start. This is by Chris Lisvardi from the H&R staff. Decatur. Richland Community College is preparing to enter into the design phase to start construction on the Carroll School of Business. The Board of Trustees approved a contract Tuesday with BLDD Architects for the design services on the project. The process is moving forward to about two-thirds of the $5 million goal. Two-thirds of the $5 million goal has been raised, President Gail Saunders said. It is advancing toward construction starting later in the summer or early fall, she said. We'll be on the cutting edge of space design, said Greg Florian, Richland's Vice President of Finance and Administration. There will end up being some really amazing spaces that will hopefully enhance the learning environment so students stay engaged. BLDD will be using a new design concept that it can bring to other clients, Florian said. Renovations are needed as the second floor of Richland's main building hasn't changed much since it was built, he said. It's ready for changes, Florian said. It'll be second to none. Trustee Randy Prince said starting the design phase is an exciting step in the process. Board Chairman Bruce Campbell said further developing the Carroll School can help local businesses by preparing students for what will be expected of them to run small to medium-sized companies. The project is advancing as Richland continues operations with limited dollars, Florian said. Revenue from tuition is down as the college continues to wait for a resolution to the state's budget impasse, he said. We'll continue to monitor what's going on, Florian said. We've covered quite a bit of the deficit. Certainly we have a challenge. Florian said Richland was able to keep part of his adult education program running after receiving federal grant money. The future of the program had been in question to start the year after not receiving anticipated funding from the state. We want to keep the faculty engaged, Florian said. For those students, it's hard to get back into the mode if they have too long a break. In other business, Campbell said the board is very near to a decision to name an interim president to take over for Saunders, who's planning to retire as of March 1st. He said a selection committee is being formed to aid in the national search to fill the position on a permanent basis. End of the article on Richland. And now a bunch of briefs here on the local page. Decatur, man alleges punching. Police allege a Decatur woman who did not want to be served papers relating to a civil case. Punched the server in the throat Monday morning. Sworn statements also accused the 42-year-old woman of grabbing the papers from the mail process server and attempting to shove them down his coat as the man walked away. She was later arrested by police and booked on preliminary charge of aggravated battery. The end. Next one. Decatur again. Man flees traffic stop. A Decatur man who didn't want to get another ticket was in the Macon County Jail on Tuesday after allegedly leading police on a high-speed chase. Sworn statements claim the 22-year-old suspect fled a traffic stop at William and Church Street Monday evening. Police said the suspect reached speeds of more than 60 miles per hour as he blew through stop signs and they broke off the pursuit because of safety concerns. Officers later spotted the driver running in the 600 block of South Hayworth Avenue where he was arrested and booked on preliminary charge of aggravated fleeing and eluding. Police said the suspect told him he fled because he did not have a driver's license and did not want any tickets. He remains jailed in lieu of posting a $30,000 bond. Again, indicator. Milliken MLK event. The legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. will be celebrated at 5:30 p.m. Thursday, January 28th, in the lower level of Milliken's Richard Treat University Center. Reflections will be given by women's basketball coach Lori Cairns, as well as Mackenzie Sauer, Brandley Hensley, Anthony Sims, and others. There'll be also be performances by Josh Miller, Jared Rixton, and Wyatt Burton. And next, Decatur helps Flint, Michigan with water. This is by Allison Petty, another staff writer for the Herald and Review. Decatur. Members of the Decatur community are pitching in to help Flint, Michigan, where residents are struggling with a water contamination crisis. The effort started Saturday with Jacob Jenkins, who posted videos on Facebook challenging people to donate a case of water. It began to snowball quickly, with many Decatur residents and some in other cities accepting the challenge. We're standing together as a community, young, old, black, white, Hispanic, whatever you are, we can do this together, Jenkins said in the first video. Jenkins is the co-founder of a mentoring program called the Distinguished Gentleman's Academy and said the effort was also a way to teach young men about service. I'm completely overwhelmed and have been in tears at times by the response, he said Tuesday. There are multiple drop-off locations for the water, which will be collected until Friday morning. The Gateway Community Center on Cantrell, Rated R Tattoo on Main, Hands of Favor Beauty Salon on Woodford, My Shipping Place on Pershing. East Pershing. In addition, Decatur Public Schools will accept water until Friday morning. Jamian Holder, co-founder of the Academy, who is also helping organize the challenge, said volunteers will leave Decatur on Friday evening and distribute water directly to Flint residents on Saturday. And this is going to be one member of America to another member of America, he said. Macon County Sheriff's Deputy Elgin Hawthorne saw Jenkins' videos and was inspired to post one challenging his colleagues. The Sheriff's Office accepted the challenge and posted Hawthorne's video on its Facebook page, and a community response poured in. We welcome anybody who wants to donate water to Flint to go ahead and do that, Hawthorne said. Sheriff Thomas Schneider said the office will collect water until February 5th from 8 to 4 at the Macon County Law Enforcement Center, 333 South Franklin. That's the end of that article. And the last piece we'll read for the part one of our recording is also from Local. It says, Bobcat rules head to committee for approval. Critic says hunting will cause animal decline. Dan Petrella, Springfield. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources has issued proposed rules for the state's first legal bobcat hunt in decades under a new law that took effect January 1st. If adopted, the rules would establish a hunting season for the once threatened species from November 10th through January 31st, with breaks during firearm deer hunting season. Trapping bobcats would be allowed from November 5th through January 20th north of US 36 and from November 10th through January 25th south of US 36. Hunting and trapping would be prohibited in the region north of US 36 and east of US 51. Hunters and trappers would be required to get a $5 permit from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources before trying to take the cats. The department says it'll issue a limited number each year on a first-come, first-served basis. And, of course, all the hunting rules are online at the DNR Illinois Gov page. There would be a limit of one bobcat permit hunter per hunter or trapper per season, and there'll be a $5 registration fee after each animal is captured. The department has presented its proposal to the General Assembly's Joint Committee on Administrative Rules for review, and the public has the opportunity to comment on them until March 7th. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service also will review the rules to ensure they comply with federal regulations. The law allowing bobcat hunting in Illinois for the first time since 1972 was met with opposition from those who said the practice led to the species addition to the state's list of threatened animals. It was removed from the list in 1999. The Humane Society of the United States was one of the most vocal opponents. State Director Mark Ayers said the proposed rules don't allay any of the organization's concerns. The rules would jeopardize the still recovering species by allowing same methods that led to their demise in the first place, Ayers said. Supporters said the Department of Natural Resources have said hunting and trapping will be carefully regulated to preserve the population. Bob Dewey runs Dewey's Hunt Club in Hayworth, which is in the area where the bobcat hunting would still be prohibited. He said that's just fine with him. There's not enough here to really cause a concern, Dewey said. End of this article by Dan Petrella, the Springfield Bureau Chief for the Herald and Review. And end of part two for Wednesday, January 27th, 2016. Talk to you again soon.